This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer.
Welcome to the latest episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. This is a video podcast and a podcast about flight training news, opinion, and comments. And we've got lots of those to share with you. So today, we're going to go over some things. We're waiting on Hurricane Ian to rear its ugly head here in South Florida. So fortunately, I'm out of the cone, but that doesn't mean out of the zone. So a lot of wind projected to come this way, up to 50 knots or so. So anyway, I'll be busy tomorrow putting everything away. So today, what we're going to go over is some flight training conferences and events that you should be attending each year. I've curated my favorites and the ones I think are most related to flight training, and we can talk about, or I will talk about, what's unique about each one of them and why you should go and where they are. So do that first part of the show. And the second part of the show, we're going to go through some airplane pro tips. So we each podcast, we have three pro tips that we give airplane specific. When we run out of those, we'll do seaplane. And I don't think we'll ever run out of airplane ones, though. But anyway, if we do, we'll do seaplane, and we'll do rotorcraft, we'll do all kinds of things. We'll do IFR, we'll do something. So these are all very good because they are things that can really help you out in flying. And then we're going to say, have useful things to keep in your flight bag. So I've got a little article I wrote on that, which I think you'll like that. It'll give you some insight, some things you probably didn't think of in there. And then learning and or teaching airspace, what not to do and what to do. So that's the nature of what we're going to do today. So that's how it's all going to roll today. So hope you're having a good time wherever you're at. And we're getting ready for our CFI class, initial CFI class, which is in what is that, next month? So next month it'll be. So, wow, that's something there. So anyway, it's completely full. We've never had a class, I don't think, as big as this. But, well, we've had them this big, but not as many. So this one's 12, and we have five in our double I class, the very next, or six, I think, at the moment, next. So anyway, quite a bit there. So let's take a look at some of these conferences or flight training events you should attend, and then why. So there's a small one, small-ish. It's big for what it is. It's called the Northwest Aviation Conference and Trade Show, and it's located in Puyallup, Washington, which is near Seattle, near enough to Seattle. And so that's a pretty large show. It's a local show for the North Pacific Northwest, but it attracts a lot of visitors, a lot of exhibitors. There's a giant exhibit hall there, a big size exhibit hall, and around 75 safety seminars they do during that, of all topics for all kinds of things. So that's really worth going to if you're up and around that area. We have exhibited there before, a number of years ago we were there. It was it's at the fairgrounds in Puyallup, Washington. So anyway, it's going to be on February next year, 25th through the 26th. So 25th through 26th, the very end of the month. And it'll be a little chilly up that way, but there's that. So yeah, so attend that if you can. The next one is FASANA, F-S-A-N-A. And that one is the Flight School Association of North America. And so that is specifically for flight schools, and there's a side of it that does DPE stuff as well. There's a DPE symposium they do once a year, but the conference is centered about flight schools and flight training providers. So I wouldn't say it was a lot of flight instructors go, but they're not necessarily all members, because the membership is quite expensive. Well, pricey, but expensive is relative, right? Depends on what you get for it. So good representation. The organization used to be smallish, and now it's a lot bigger. So this show is going to have information on all kinds of things, regulatory things. So you're going to have a chance to see these regulatory things, which are the FAA and TSA usually are there, and they give sort of what's happening with an FAA land and what's happening TSA, what's coming up, answer questions, which so you get kind of access to people there. It is going to be in Orlando this year, coming. It's in March 1st through 3rd, and it's around $500 if you're a member. Membership is around 100 and something. If you're not a member, it's about 600. But for that, they do include the dinner, which has a keynote speaker, so that's included with that. So and all the they have breakout sessions and panels. So it's interesting, the breakout panels, because you do get to network with some other flight schools and people who do maybe this kind of training, and it really gives us a chance to share ideas and to see what's working and what's not. So if this business, even if you're a flight instructor, it wouldn't be terrible to go to, but just expensive. But if you can swing it, I would try to do that. Vasana, then Redbird Migration. This is one of the best ones, flight training conference, probably the best one. Gonna be at Oshkosh, Wisconsin, April the 11th and 12th. It's the only conference specifically for people who is involved in flight training. There are no other exhibitors, and the content is all about flight training. So it isn't hodgepodge, it isn't how to get an instrument rating and how to do better at flying IFR or any of those kind of things, or how to build an airplane, none of that. It's all about flight training. There's no charge to attend. So if you're a flight instructor, DPE, or flight school owner, this would be a great conference for you. And when you attend, they throw in lunches, they have them catered in, and also dinner. There's at least one dinner, I think it's one dinner. And it'll be where the, and interesting because AOPA is there, and that's where they announce the winners of the flight school experience, or flight experience, flight instructor and flight school experience, which they do every year. So one of our CFI bootcamp graduates, Amber Peterson, was won the Flight Instructor Experience Award in the up in Minneapolis area. So so good on her, she did that. So I'd go to that, and you can see if you subscribe to, by the way, to our newsletter, which is basically what I do, a narration sort of and some comment, what I'm looking at over here in the left, that is the newsletter. And you get that by email if you'll go to our website and just opt into it. If you opt into that, you'll get this, has all the links in it, so you can just click onto those things and see what you think. So there's always good stuff in there. So, but you have to register. Our website is cfibootcamp.com. So C, Charlie Foxtrot, India, bootcamp.com, all one word, and you'll find a way to opt into the newsletter. Why I've got you here, the other thing we do have, or do, I do, is something called the Power Hour. The Power Hour is on Saturdays from noon to 1 Eastern time. So, and that is a single subject about something relative to flight training that's kind of fun or important. So like last week, just a few days ago, I did the Power Hour on how to teach and learn from 4Flight, how to synchronize Dropbox folders so you can share information between you and your students, or you have everything you need right in one spot. You don't have to have anything else, how to use the annotation tools within 4Flight, how to use the profile view in a flight plan to teach airspace and to teach awareness of cloud, awareness of terrain, that kind of thing. That was all in there. So if the way you do that, of course, if you go to our website, again, cfibootcamp.com, you're going to see a red bar on every page, and it says something about join the Power Hour. It's a red bar that's on every page. You'll see it. So click onto that, put your name in there and your email, and then you'll get a newsletter, you get an email about the Power Hour, and it gives you a link, and it also, you get a reminder about Wednesday or Thursday of the week, and you get a reminder an hour before the show starts, and then you get another reminder as it starts. So that way you're unlikely to miss it unless you're not going to be around there. So the other one show that we've got here is Sun and Fun. So Sun and Fun is called Aerospace Expo. It's in Lakeland, Florida. So it's a permanent facility like Oshkosh, EAA, Air Venture. And it's in Lakeland, Florida. And so it's going to be the 28th of March to April 2nd. If I didn't tell you, by the way, if just on this Redbird migration thing before I forget, it's April the 11th to the 12th, just in case I forgot, April 11th, 12th. And so the Sun and Fun is going to be March 28th through April 2nd, so pretty long show. This event has dedicated facilities, big, there's at least 4 hangars that are filled with exhibitors. There's a lot of space outside. Lots of airplanes show up there, camping. All kinds of things happen there. And there's exhibits and forums just about for anybody, any reason, all day, every day. So there'll be forums that you can attend, and those will be, like Gary Reeves is there, he does forums on IFR, flying IFR, and it'll be in it's an education center that they built, purpose built for these kind of things and for educating. So it's in that area over there. So nice facilities, and you can stay out of the heat. It used to be in all the tents years ago, a few years ago, it was in tents outside with fans. So, you know, this is better because it gets hot in Florida about that time of year. So that is going to be, again, March 28th through April 2nd. And good show. And then the grandfather of them all, the big one, the big mamu there is EAA Air Venture at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Every year, dedicated space at Whitman Airport. It's July 24th through the 30th this year. They'll have, it's the largest aviation event in the world. There's be about 600,000 attendees. Center Fund, by the way, gets 100 to 200,000. And there'll be about 10,000 airplanes here at Oshkosh flying in at various places, various times. It features camping by your airplane, exhibits, forums, and there's workshops, like workshops on how to weld, how to do riveting, all this stuff. That's all included in your get-in-the-door price. So that's a really big event. And there's all, of course, a big air show. And lots of airplanes, unique airplanes you probably would never see anywhere else, giant warbirds displays of real airplanes that are there. Like, I'll give you an example. So they did the demonstration, the Airbus A380 there. I did slow flight. They did some demonstration stuff with the aircraft in flight. And then also the Air New Zealand once had chartered a 74 to come from Auckland over directly to Oshkosh. And then they did three flybys, right, in various configurations, steep turns and some other things. So it was pretty interesting to see that, show the pilots like that. So that's those are the events that you want to attend. All right, now let's get to the pro tips, airplane pro tips. I like that. Okay, so the first tip, which you've heard this before, but maybe you don't know why, keep your hand on the throttle. Keep your hand on the throttle. Flying with two hands on takeoff is meant for turboprop and jet aircraft. It's when you get the decision speed, you take your hand off the lever, and then you put on the control wheel and say, okay, we're going now. It's a commitment to go. But the throttle is set, or the condition levers, or the lever is set for a particular amount of takeoff, so it's going to stay there. But not so much in these airplanes. In our airplanes, the throttle slip out, friction knot isn't set right, or you could think of that throttle as being a necessary flight control. It really becomes a flight control during certain maneuvers. If your hand isn't on it, then you're making a very kind of reactive. So for example, let's say you're doing slow flight or a steep turn. Steep turn's a good example. So you roll in the steep turn and your hand's not on the throttle and you're holding with both hands like you really have to hold that. So if you're doing that, you're doing it wrong, by the way. So you need to feel it, but you can also, when you get proficient, you can use trim and then you won't have to do that. And then the other hand goes on the throttle because if you have both hands on the throttle, you'll then look at the airspeed indicator at some point and see that it's decreased in airspeed due to drag. And then you put your hand up on it and you shove it in there. But if your hand's already on it, you can look over as you roll into steep turn and just nudge in the power as you need to maintain the airspeed, and you do it interactively. And so it makes your flying a lot more cohesive and smooth. You know, everything in the airplane should be part of you. It should be an extension of you. Right, so when you turn, you should feel like that's you turning with you, right? And when you turn and you're gonna lose airspeed, you should feel like you're running out of gas a little bit, you should be putting in the throttle. So the airplane should become one with you, if that makes sense. All right, so there's that. Yeah, if you're practicing spins, be sure, this is the second tip, if you're gonna practice spins or do spins or teaching spins, make sure the controls are firmly on the stop until you wanna recover. So that means the elevator has to be full back and held full back. And the rudder, once it's on the stop, you keep your foot on there and you keep it on the stop. And the reason for that is because this is the only way to be sure, absolutely 100% sure, that the spin mode will be predictable. So that's how it was flight tested. So they might have come off the stops a little bit at the C, but when they recommended the spin recovery procedure, everything was based on the controls being fully on their stop. So if you don't have them fully on the stops, you don't know what could happen. I'm not saying anything bad could happen, but it might. So best to keep the controls all the way on the stops until you want to recover. And then when you recover, use the spin recovery procedure that's in the handbook. By the way, most people get this wrong too. I mean, a lot of people get this wrong. They say the spin recovery technique is pair. They've heard this, and it sounds nice, so people say, oh yeah, I know what this is. Power to idle, I want neutral elevator. Rudder opposite direction of the spin, and then after that, bring the elevator forward. That's not true in all airplanes. That's true if you don't have a spin recovery procedure, use that. But if you do, use the one that you've got. So in the Cessna 172, we don't have pair. It's similar, but it's not quite there, so listen to this. It's power, idle, ailerons neutral, rudder opposite the stop, opposite direction of the turn, and listen to this part. And as soon as it hits the stop, bring the elevator briskly forward. So you were to do that. Most people push it to the stop, and then they wait for it to stop spinning, and then they push the stick forward. It, depending on where your C of G is, your center of gravity is, if you don't bring the stick forward after you hit the stop, it may not recover. You blanket, especially if you got flat, and you blanket it off the rudder, where the relative wind is nearly vertical when you're not quite vertical, but it's very, very far down. So you're not a lot of air pushing up on the tail, right? Well, like you have in normal flight. So you really have to get that free, and the way to do it is to bring the stick forward, unstall the wing, and get that thing going again. So at the Duchess, as an example, which is a multi-engine airplane, it's not approved for spins, but they did extensive spin tests in it. And here's what it says. It says, power idle, ailerons neutral, rudder opposite direction of spin, elevator full forward, not briskly forward, but full forward. And it said, do this all as simultaneously as possible. So you really need to read the spin recovery procedure for your airplane and be sure you're doing it right. Okay, the other one, this is for 172, avoid slips with the flaps extended. Have you seen that placard on your, just above the, where the flap indicator is, flap lever is, it says avoid slips with flaps extended. Have you ever seen that? Yes, you have. It's note that it's not a limitation. It doesn't say don't do it. But I think if you don't know why that statement is there, then you should probably avoid slips with flaps extended. But if you know what you're going to right now, then you'll know that you can go a little bit farther than just not slipping. So what happens is when you slip with the flaps extended, you disrupt the airflow over the tail. And so the tail downforce changes and you'll get pitch oscillations like this. The tail will start stalling. If you do it really abruptly, if you aggressively go into it, you actually could possibly stall the tail, which you wouldn't want. Then you get uncommanded pitch forward. And if you're near the ground, you hit the ground. So you can slip, but as soon as you feel the slightest indication of the airplane starting to change pitch, then that's as far, you can't go any farther than that. So don't go farther than that. You still can, and you can fully slip, and you'll get these oscillations, and you may not care if you're high enough in altitude, but if you're near the ground, that may not work out too well for you. So that's the reason for it, okay? So you could slip. Don't slip ever super hard. Don't enter a slip really aggressively. There's no reason to do that, by the way, unless, I suppose, I can't think of a single reason you enter a slip like really super aggressively. Unless you were engine failure and you weren't going to make the field and you hadn't slipped yet, or you have to hurry and get up on it, I guess that'd be it. So there's that. So that's the reason for it. So if you can remember that, then go ahead and slip up to where you just begin to get the tail, or you feel it. As soon as it starts back off from it, so it's not doing that, then you're good, okay? Okay, useful things to keep in your flight bag. That's a something, right? I bet you didn't think of at least one of these, is what I say. So for most of you, you have a flight bag. You probably are toting around a bunch of things that aren't needed. And you'll know that, and you'll see senior flight instructors. I can tell you what we carry. We carry a headset, an iPad. I'm just about out of things that we carry. At night, we carry a flashlight or two. Telephone, phones have a flashlight too, right? So, I don't know, that's it, because we don't need all that stuff. You know, after a while, you figure out, we don't need this. So here's three things you might have not have thought of that you should have in there. So also, the other thing I say is, I know you some of you, and maybe Brightline is listening, and makes bags. You know those bags, Brightline, you've seen them at the store. They got 50 pockets, so what do? You go to the pilot spy store somewhere and buy 50 things to put in the 50 pockets. If there are 55 pockets, you go get 5 more things, right? If you thought there were 40 pockets, right? And then you said, oh, there's 10 more pockets. Then you go out and get 10 more things, right? So a lot of this you do not need. But here's some stuff you do need. Like, for example, you don't need a 3 sets of headset batteries. You really don't. And one set will do, right? One set or additional ones you've got. A fast-acting decongestant, such as Vicks Sinus Severe in spray form. You really want that in your flight bag. What? I didn't think about that, did you? So I model a lot of this stuff off the Air Force and combat and what they do. I mean, they will give pilots, if they're going to combat, a bag with morphine, with speed. Can't remember the name of the drug. They'll give decongestants, because you're going to fly if you're sick or not, if we need you, right? So there's all these things they put in there. I'm not saying go get all that, of course, but a decongestant can really help. If you ever have a passenger who has middle ear problems and you can't get that clear, it's going to be a big deal. And a fast-acting decongestant will work like magic. It'll work fast, and it'll work pretty good. And if it happens to you, of course, you can't take a decongestant and fly. You're not allowed to do that. But in the event of emergency, you can do whatever you want. And I would contend that that's better than you having so much pain you can't fly the airplane. So you make the decision, but have it in your bag, a decongestant. Yeah. Let me see if there's something else here. Yes. So also take aspirin or ibuprofen, naproxen, which is Aleve, Advil's ibuprofen, acetaminophen, Tylenol, all four. Yes, all four, not just one. Why all four? Because someone's allergic to one of those or can't take it. Like for me, I can't take acetaminophen. So if all you got is Tylenol, I'm just going to have to grin and bear it. I can't take it. So can't do that. So anyway, other people can't, other things, right? So if you fly high enough, you're going to get hypoxia in one form or another. If you fly long enough, you're going to get a headache, a big headache, right? And so are the passengers too. So having those kind of things on board, very, very important. So the third thing, which we would want to have, is a space blanket. What? So a space blanket, I'm just looking to see if I can get a picture. So the so this thing is really small. It fits about this big. It's made out of a reflective coating on it, and it will keep you warm. And if you don't believe you're going to sleep in an airplane, you might, because if you go somewhere and there's no fuel, or you have to land somewhere and there's no cell service out in the airport in the middle of nowhere, and I've slept in an airplane a few times, right? No fuel being the biggest reason. So, or if something happens, right? You land off airfield or whatever that would be, then you want to be sure that you have a way to keep warm. Also, that can be a signaling device too, because it's reflective, right? It's silvered. So, or yellow, it's kind of a orange, yellow kind of thing. You can see it if you reflect the sun off of it, right? So there's, so amphetamines was what I was thinking of for the speed. So for, that would give, to keep people up. Don't take those. Don't put that in your flight bag. You don't need that. You can just stop and land somewhere. You don't have enough fuel to worry about that. So anyway, but make sure you take a decongestant. Okay, back to the outline here. So that's something you didn't think about, right? A space blanket. And here's the last one. This is the funniest one. You're going to love it. Silly Putty. If you don't know what that is, go look at it. When we were kids, you had this stuff. It's coming like an egg-shaped thing. And you pull out the silly, it's like putty. And then you could press it. And then you could press it onto something like a cartoon or something like this. And you could pull it up and the impression would be there. I guess, and it would bounce like crazy, a bouncy ball. So before there was Wi-Fi or iPads, we had Silly Putty. So that it still exists. So we had to entertain ourselves. By the way, there's a great line on Game of Thrones about boredom. This girl says to her father, she goes, "Daddy, I'm bored." And she says to him, she goes, he says to her, says, "Boredom shows a lack of inner resources." So Silly Putty. Okay. So what was it for? You know, if you fly a 172S model, you'll know that those vents, you have two on each side up by your, up high, that'll blow air on you, and the other side. People over-tighten those or over-open them, and they get stuck, and you can't get them unstuck. And so, or they just leak, right? After a while, they just get stuck in one position, they leak. And so, in the middle of the winter, the air, you go, "Oh, gee, you didn't bring a coat." So you just take your Silly Putty and snap it up into that hole, and it will block all that air out of there. So I take two, because sometimes both of them are that other side, and it really helps. And then also, if there's any like leak in the airplane where the rain's coming through a little bit, you can stretch this stuff out, stick it up there, and it works great. And then the nice thing about it doesn't stick to anything. So when you're ready to leave the airplane, just pull it out. You won't have to like clean anything. It'll just come right out. So Silly Putty. Didn't know that, did you? There you go. All right, now let's look at, lastly here, what we're going to look at was teaching and or learning airspace. I see this done so wrong, I can't believe it. The reason it's done wrong, by the way, it's because most flight instructors are not teachers. There are flight instructors who need to be teachers, not teachers who want to be pilots. If it were the other way around, an educator would not teach airspace the way we see flight instructors teach airspace. So educators know that people will get task saturated. They know that people can only take so much time on a subject. They know that if there's memorization involved, you can't have them memorize something and then immediately apply it, right? So these kind of things are known in education, right? So we're going to teach airspace in four steps. So it's going to take a while. It's going to take about 2 hours to teach the entire airspace. But when you do it this way, or you learn it this way, you're really going to learn airspace, and it's going to stick, which is good, right? The only way, of course, to keep this fresh, you got to keep, I have something there for you to keep, you got to keep practicing it. But anyway, learning it. So first thing to do is just use the legend on the sectional, go to the airspace section side, and then identify all of that airspace on the chart, including the altitudes where it starts. That's the whole mission, nothing else. Then when that's over, you will have the student then, you'll put your finger on the chart somewhere, or on the iPad, wherever it is, and say, what airspace would you be at here at, make some altitude, 3,000 feet, MSL. Then the student should, without much hesitation, with some practice, should be able to say, okay, class echo below 10,000 feet, yeah, so class echo. And then what is it over here, class B, above class B, below class B, whatever those places are, but do them all. Every single, find tursas, find out though, everything, and special use airspace, all of it. But just identifying it, only nothing else, right? Because we want the student to be able to get what type of airspace it is first and to get it right every time, because getting it wrong means you're gonna get the wrong cloud clearance of visibilities, wrong entry requirements, and so on and so forth. So this is gonna take around 30 to 45 minutes, right? So probably around 20 minutes or so to teach the, 20 minutes or maybe more, a little bit more to teach the airspace, 30. And then maybe 15 minutes of practice. Okay, so you've got that. And then when you meet again, you're gonna teach the cloud clearances and visibilities for the different airspace. So there's only five cases, by the way. So I usually write up the five cases and say, this is all that exists. 1 mile clear of clouds, 3 miles clear of clouds, 3152, 5111, and 1152. That's it, there's nothing else. So there's no reason to say 5 miles clear of clouds. It doesn't exist, not one of the five things. So if you know the five things, then you won't say something that isn't one of the five things, right? If you've memorized that. So like multiplication tables, a small subset of that. So teach cloud clearance, and then when they've done with that, then go back to the chart, and what airspace are you at? 3,000 feet here, 2,000 feet here, and the student, without very little hesitation, should say something like, that's class Charlie. I need to have 3 miles visibility, 500 above, 1,000 above, 2,000. And then after that, you can let them say 3,152, because you know that they know what that means. So until they know what it means, you have to say the full thing. All right, so then you've integrated that in. That's gonna take about 30 minutes. Then you're gonna teach the entry requirements and speed limits for each airspace, and you can use the chart and do the same thing. So now you're embedding the speed limits and make sure that you cover the class B, below class B in the corridors and within 4 nautical miles of an airport, class Delta or Charlie, what the speed limit changes, so know that. And then the last thing is on the last lesson, so at 30 minutes, is gonna be teaching the equipment entry requirements, like transponder, ADS-B requirements, and also teach special use airspace. The student should, including special flight rules area, like the CFRA around Washington, the special flight rules area around the Grand Canyon, and so on. And so, and then the student at this time should be really familiar, and proficient with airspace, and they've got it. Instead of writing the whole thing on the board, you know, writing that whole mess on the board, and the student looks at it and goes like, I have to know this. But if you do it in pieces, they'll be able to get it, okay? So all good educators know that. Now we do have a product called, if you go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, you'll find airspace flashcards. It's a product that we built, and it's really amazing, it's really cool. So it's 120 or so different examples, and it's a snippet of a sectional chart, and there's a black arrow that says, and it says, like, what is the airspace at 2,000 feet here? And then the next page is the answer, so class G, but along with that, we have an explanation of why it's class G. So this allows you to go through the airspace and to practice it on your own. And you'll not practice the wrong thing, because it'll tell you if you got it wrong, and you can look at the explanation. If you keep getting it wrong, then you can work with your flight instructor to resolve that. But it's a way to do that. It's also a very good way for a flight instructor to teach airspace. Once you've taught it all, then you can use it basically just like flashcards. And like I say, there's identifying airspaces in one part of the book, and then the second part of the book is the requirements. And I'm adding more to that as time goes. There'll be ADS-B, I'm including that now, along with some many other things will be in there. So there'll be probably another 50 examples, I think. That's what I'm working on. So right now there's like 120. So it gives you plenty to work through. So like before a test, this is a great thing to drill and kill. So it's airspace flashcards, and you can find it at cfibootcamp.com. So the things to remember now are make sure that you sign up for the newsletter so you get a physical copy of this. The second thing you want to do is to join the Power Hour. for us. The Power Hour is the free single subject thing we do every Saturday. We've done 106, 107. We've done 107. So people have asked this. They say, how do I get access to the previous ones? Well, there's only one way, unfortunately, or fortunately. So we have a membership site. It's $22 a month. But, if you are a Power Hour member, so you go to the Power Hour thing, sign up for that on our website, the red bar, you get it for $9 a month. Then you get them all. There's 107 of them. You also get videos on tribal knowledge we've created when we're doing flight instructor training with flight instructors who are in the field asking questions. We're resolving those, like dispelling myths and all this stuff. And there's short subject videos in there of like, what are the aircraft antennas and what do they do? Videos of that. There are all kinds of things in there. So, and you can quit at any time. So that's your option. Or there's the basic membership, which is free. But it doesn't have all the powers. It might have 10 or 12 of them, something like that in there. But anyway, people ask, so I figured I'd tell you. So that's that, and I will talk to you again next month, and hopefully have some more news, some news coming out about electric airplanes, some news about some FAA stuff that's coming out. Maybe we'll have some news about the ACSs by then. Hopefully that's going to be in October, and I'll see you next time on another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It with your host, Mike Show. Bye-bye. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinions.